Welcome to the Tradies in Business podcast with your hosts, Warwick Bidwell and Nicole Cox. Divert your phone and grab a brew as Waz and Nick unpack tips, tales, secrets and stuff-ups from guests both inside and outside your trade, helping educate and inspire you to break the cycle of gut-busting and money stress and create a true trade business.
G'day, listeners.
Are you waiting for them to say g'day, Waz?
Well, I've been waiting for a while, Coxie, and it doesn't seem to happen. Nobody says g'day back.
I wonder if everyone in their car is sitting there yelling, g'day, Waz, how you going? Great to hear from you.
Somehow I don't think so. I reckon they're just like, oh, Waz, give another one. Shut up and let Coxie talk.
No, I don't think so.
How are you today, Nicole?
Very well, Warwick. Thank you. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Now, we have a guest sitting here wondering what the heck is going on. Because I think it's a bit weird for people when they're a part of our Waffle with Waz intros. And today's guest has had a few cameo mentions on the show. So it's pretty cool to actually have him here in real life, for reals.
Totes.
Tom Frauenfelder from Ground Up Projects. Welcome to the show, mate.
Good morning, guys. I'd love to say this. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
What a start.
I've been dying to say that on any form of radio or podcast.
We've had a few people bust that one out.
I like it.
Obviously, a bucket list item for a few people is to get on a podcast or a radio show. So we're really pleased to help you tick off a bucket list item of yours, mate.
Thank you, guys. Well, thanks for having me.
No, it's a pleasure, mate.
Pleasure.
So we're chatting with you as a real tradie guy. I don't know how much of a real tradie you are. I mean, you're an electrician after all. But
coming in with the burn early, Warren.
Setting the tone. So, yeah, pretty keen to chat to you, mate. We're working with you here at Tradies in Business, so we'll tell our listeners that straight up. You are a member and a client, and you're doing some pretty cool stuff. You've been going way outside your comfort zone in the last 12 months, I reckon. So we thought it'd be great to share your story, as it is with a lot of our real tradie stories, real tradie guys, real tradie wives, real tradie couples, and they're generally our most popular episodes. So don't screw it up, mate. Tell everybody a bit about yourself and a bit about Tom and your background and how you came to be running an electrical business, mate.
Well, thanks, guys. I feel really privileged to be sort of on the podcast today. You've had some incredible people talk, and I feel like they've all got an incredibly deep connection with their trades. And I haven't exactly fallen into where I am now. I don't come from a long-standing trade family. My parents were in tourism. My grandparents were in tourism. So to be a tradie was kind of something that wasn't in our family. And I think it all stemmed from the fact that with mum and dad owning a tourism business, they had always had a lot of construction elements going on. And my nickname as a little kid, so always in the road. That was my nickname on a building site. I was the inquisitive little 10-year-old that was trying to be in front of people and ask questions and just learn. Finished school, knew straight away that I had no interest in going to university. I wanted to trade straight away. But growing up in a small country town, the selection isn't there. You essentially get given an apprenticeship. Whatever apprenticeship that is, you jump at it and you grab with both hands and you go. There is no opportunity to shop around, so to speak. An electrical came up and I grabbed it and we went running. So I started in quite a large business for a small country town that jumped on the solar bandwagon when that was starting up with in 2009. And subsequently they grew beyond their means, and when that revenue dried up, they sort of closed down in 2011, which sent me up to the ski fields. So we went down to Thredbo, New South Wales, and I landed my apprenticeship there to finish off, and stayed there for 5 years. That was one of the most incredible experiences, working and living on the snow, waking at 3 a.m. to be on the mountain in the morning for startup. It was an absolutely incredible experience, and I wouldn't change that for the world. But at the end of my apprenticeship, my now wife, who was in Sydney doing her physiotherapy uni degree, finished up, and we needed to make that next step. So we decided that we had to move to the city. And I'm sorry to all your listeners in Sydney, that was the other option, and there is no way that you would get a guy from a small country town moving to the big smoke. So Sydney was off the cards, and luck would have it, a good friend of mine lived up here in Brisbane, and off we moved. So when we moved to Brizzy, I actually gave my electrical apprenticeship sort of away a little bit and decided to chase what I really wanted to do, which was becoming a builder, and through that getting my carpentry apprenticeship. And I was very fortunate to do that. But finishing my carpentry apprenticeship here in Brisbane sort of gave me the realization that building was probably not for me. I loved the process, and I loved the dealing with clients and dealing with all the sub trades. I suppose I was very tarnished with some of the people around me having very hard experiences through the building industry that we talk about so often. And I felt, my wife and I felt, that that there was no use pushing away this electrical apprenticeship and this electrical experience that I'd had. And however, how many, the joke always is, how many poor electricians do you see? So we decided that why are we fighting this? We need to push forward and focus in on becoming an electrician. So yeah, 2015, we decided to go ahead and just be a sole trader electrician. And in end of 2019, we got really serious and jumped in here with Trades in Business. And the growth from 2019 to 2020 has been astronomical. We've changed every aspect of what we did. But I don't think we've lost who we are, which is probably the most important thing. So up until now, we've had a fantastic year with you guys. We've learned some incredible experiences and, met some incredible people along the way as part of the network.
Tom, you talk about growth. Sorry, Coxie. You talk about growth, mate, and I guess a lot of people think of growth as growth on their profit and loss or growth in staff numbers. But what's been some of the other ways you think you and maybe the business and perhaps even the missus have grown, mate?
Well, that's a pretty tough question. I think the growth is still happening. I think it's more the personal development that we're starting to experience. You put so much time and effort into changing your bad habits and understanding what it actually takes to run a business and not just be a good tradie. And I think that has just opened the floodgates, and we're just starting to experience that now, that understanding of the direction that we want to take. When we first started with you, I remember sitting down and we were having our very first meeting, and you asked me what my goal was. And at that time, we actually didn't have a goal. We had no idea where we wanted to go, what we wanted to do. And just understanding that this year has been an incredibly important part of the process.
Mm. Sorry, I wasn't sure if you were pausing or if my internet was failing again, as per normal, because it's been a bit glitchy. It's been a morning of technology headaches, so maybe I should be kinder to electricians, Tom, and the tech will be kinder to me.
It has been a morning, Tom. I've really enjoyed observing your critical growth, and what I mean by that is your ability to look at yourself and your need to learn things quite critically. It's something that normally takes quite a while for business owners to develop. Yet I feel that you've developed that very quickly. has that been challenging for you? Is that thing that you've always been able to do? Is it something you still struggle with? Tell me about your experience with that.
I think growing up, so mum and dad ran their small business my entire life. So I've always grown up in business. And I think that's has been really important, because I've been able to understand that you're your biggest barrier. And mum and dad would always talk about that aspect of getting in your own road. And I think that's where we're very much, both my wife and I are very much people that don't dwell on something, don't look at an issue and talk about what if. If there's a problem, the problem's happened, move on, let's find the solution. And I think we've gone in with that aspect to the business of what do we need to change to get to the destination that we're looking to get to? Okay. And that's it. We just need to do it. And I think when we took on our first staff member in the middle of this year, there was a lot of unknowns. We didn't have every box ticked. We didn't have the huge amount of cash in the bank that could sustain somebody for 6 months if the worst happened. We had none of that. We basically had an idea. We had work that needed to be done. And we knew that we trusted ourselves that we could make ends meet, take the risk and go. And I think that's probably come from many years of being in and around that small business mentality. There is no right time. There's just a direction that you need to go. And the more that you think about it, the more that you stop yourself from moving forward, the longer it's going to take.
Yeah, it's quite unusual though to meet somebody so young in business with that level of critical thinking. And you're absolutely right. Despite being a pothole as a kid, you're certainly not standing in your own way at any particular time. You back yourself. And that's really critical as a business owner to take that next step, to be able to do the expansion and the growth required to have a good business. Is this, again, so you? I know that your wife doesn't work in the business, but clearly you make a lot of these decisions together. Has she always had that same level of, yep, let's give it a go and back yourself? Or have you found at times there's been a point of difference for the two of you around some of these critical decisions you need to make?
Not at all. She's always been somebody who would back her idea. She's an incredibly intelligent person. She's definitely the brains of our relationship. She's very calculated and critical as well, but she knows when something's right and when something's wrong, and she's happy to back that or back her gut on what we're doing. And yeah, it's been like that through our entire relationship. So it hasn't been something that we've learned. It's something we've just adapted to our current situation. But as you said, she doesn't work in the business. She does make some decisions, but her passion's elsewhere. She would quite happily be a part of what we do for a short period of time, but it would probably be something that would be a short term thing for her. Mm-hmm. It's definitely something that we're adapting to here.
Tom, you talked about some of the, I don't know, big decisions, I guess. And I know you've made some big ones in the business. They're never easy. And I'm always curious to know how different individuals get over that hurdle of committing to action, because agreeing that something's a good idea or that you need to do it or that it's going to be a benefit is, I think that's sort of the easier part of the equation. But then actually doing it and taking the leap, whether it's in business or outside of business, and you've dabbled in Ironman and long distance events as well, mate. So you know you're not unaccustomed to suffering. how do you actually move from, okay, this is a good idea, I know we need to do this, to okay, we're doing it?
Well, the thing I like about this podcast is you're asking me more questions than I've ever asked myself.
You should hear my dinner time conversation with my wife, mate.
I have no idea. I honestly, I think it's just been the mentality that we've always had. It's once you've settled on the fact that we're going to make a change, we just do it. I don't know. I think the hurdle for a lot of us is just that the acceptance. And once you've made the acceptance, the doing aspect. You know, if you're not moving forward on the doing aspect, then you probably haven't accepted it. Mm. And I think once we lock in that idea, then that's the decision. That's the process we've made. We've analyzed it. We've understood the risks and the reward, and it's just about then backing ourselves into the solution. I think employing our first staff member was a prime example. We made the decision with you guys sitting down. It took a couple of meetings for Woz to finally poke me enough to push me in the right direction. But once we'd made that decision, putting the ad up on Seek, it was game on from then on. It was a total change in mentality of, we've done it. Yeah, let's go and really do a really good job of this. Mm. And I think that's kind of, I don't know. This is such an interesting question to ask myself. I don't think I've ever really thought too much about it.
So you say, you know, you just do it. And it sounds like that's something that's, I guess, a part of you or your approach to things, mate. Where do you think that comes from for you? Where do you think that might have been spawned?
Oh, without a doubt, it's definitely my mother. My mum is she is an incredible woman, and she is very much the person that we're not going to talk about it. We're going to action this. And I definitely follow my mum's traits there. My whole life has been a part of that, from growing up as a little kid to when, you know, you're having a weekend that's a bit rainy, mum would just say, right, everyone in the car, we're going. That would be it. No dawdling. Off we'd go to some, you know, far off destination for just a drive. So it's definitely, it starts from there, and it's still the same. I still get my mother in my ear. We do, outside of electrical work, we do a bit of real estate stuff. And so I still deal with mum there, pushing hard on her opinions and her ideas and actioning things at 9 o'clock at night because she's had an idea and that seems like the most appropriate time for her to action it. And yeah, I think that's where it all stemmed from. And I'm not sure. It's probably something I do take maybe for granted a little bit. Mm. And I suppose I've never really thought about it until this very moment, where we're actually even just discussing it a little bit, that I've never really taken it into account that it could be any other way, I suppose.
Mm. And it's a bit like that. We, we see the world through our own glasses, and I'm disappointed that I need to wear glasses to read more now these days. But, yeah, it's hard to step out and get that perspective on self. Now, I know you, I referenced before, you do a bit of Ironman, which is not bodybuilding. For anyone who doesn't know what Ironman's all about, it's actually a bunch of lunacy where you you swim a really long way and then you ride a bike a really long, long way and then you run a really long way after that, and then you call it sport and fun. So I think there's something a little bent in the brain of a long-distance athlete, mate. But tell me about parallels between endurance racing and business, mate.
I think the greatest parallel you can draw with your long-distance events, I actually do them. I love a long distance event because I love where my mind takes me. For anyone that's done a long distance event, you go to some pretty deep, dark places. There's a lot of moments where you don't think you can finish. You don't think you doubt your own personal ability. you question yourself as to why you've even undertaken something like this. And this happens multiple times, and it's quite fascinating what the brain can do when it's at maximum capacity of workload and physical fatigue. And I love it because I think that just can be, we can draw on that so frequently through life. And I think with the parallel to business is that you doubt yourself. Your mind takes yourself to these deep, dark places when cash flow might not be at its best, or you've got debits to pay and the money in the bank doesn't equate to the debits going out, or you've had injuries on site or at home. So I think you will always go to those places. And I think having with Ironman, especially, or I'm still not lucky enough to complete the full, so I'm only the 70.3 for me.
Not only, mate. There's no only in that.
There was a lot of aspirations this year, but that all went by the wayside.
A few things have changed this year, mate.
Just a few. I think that with Ironman gives you this really cool insight to know how your brain actually can bounce back. I think it gives you an idea that you can sort of see the light through and then keep pushing and then achieve your goal, which is probably something that you don't get from a lot of other sports. And I love it. I don't love it at the time. At the time, it's, it doesn't matter how much you're expecting to go through this. It still sucks. But at the end of it, those finish line feels, everyone talks about that finish line feel, and it's not that you've finished. It's not that you've actually, run the 20 kilometers or swum the 1.5. It's the fact that you've mentally achieved, you've come back. And I think it's the relief of that you've put this self-belief in yourself, and then you've achieved it. And, once you've got that, taste for that feeling, it's really hard to not want to go back each year and do it again, even though we hate the training, the 4 a.m. get ups at track. It all sucks, but once you've done it, it's definitely an addiction.
Have you ever cried at the end of a long distance race, mate?
Not yet. There's normally a little bit too much going on. The last one I did, I had to carry one of the guys across the line and put him in a chair because he for some reason forgot to hydrate properly on the bike, and it was just game over. Mm. So there's normally a lot going on. There's people cheering and music going. So it's I suppose I don't get to the teary emotions. I just can't wipe the smile off my face.
I remember the first 70.3 I did, I cried. I was, shuffling down the finishing chute and tears streaming down my face. It was a horrendous race. Hadn't prepared well for it, but it's such a
great... You've just reminded me why I didn't cry, because the finish line had a 1 kilometre to go sign, and it was actually 1.9 kilometres to go. So you put the big effort in. To set the scene, you've got the lines of people, everyone cheering you on, a kilometre go, you're absolutely cooked, but you're going to do your fastest last K. When you get to 1K on your watch and you're still not anywhere near the finish line, that is when rage takes over.
It's such a good metaphor for business, though, is what I was going to say. It's everything you just languaged. You could be talking about building a trade business. The early get-ups and the hard yards you put in at training, in inverted commas, where there is no finish line, there's no spectators, there's no one cheering you on to do lap after lap after lap. And it's so much like that in our businesses, where there's not a lot of feedback. We're slogging away and there's not really much of a reference point for, you're doing great, come on, keep going. There's no one doing that for you day after day after day in business. And there really is no finish line. It's like this open-ended race that goes on for as long as you choose to allow it to continue. So I agree with you, mate. I think you know, doing some of those sorts of pursuits, whether it's 70.3 or Ironman stuff, Ironman triathlon, or if it's, you know, running, or I don't know, some sort of, maybe it's chess because that seems to go on for a long time, but anything that goes on for a long time and requires endurance, I feel like they're really good skills to build up and good virtual muscles to strengthen for business.
You actually raised a fantastic point, Woz, in the middle of that. I think it's really important, probably the most important part that you started to reference was the fact that we need to set goals because we need those finish line feels.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it probably highlights how important stopping and recognizing the fact that we've achieved something great.
Mm-hmm.
Because business is open-ended, you know, the finish line is forever in the distance. If we don't feel that we've finished something, then we're not going to get the finish line feels that we all crave, and we're just going to burn out. So I think that's probably another really important fact that for business, that we've got to give ourselves the opportunity to feel like we've achieved something.
I want to steal that catch cry and use it in all our 90-day planning.
Finish line feels.
Advertising from here on in, let us help you find your finish line feels. Is that all right, Tom? You don't mind?
Go for it.
Tom, I'd love to get into a big conversation about how I still don't feel it's usual for people of your vintage to quite understand that, because we've come from a culture of there not being wins and losses. Everything's a little bit vanilla. But I think that will take us down a huge rabbit hole that we don't really have time for. So what I'm going to ask you instead is, what are some of the lessons you learned that you wish you had have learned earlier, or some of the changes you've made that you wish you had have enacted earlier?
I probably wish I had a clearer direction in saying, I don't know if I could particularly give too much of what I wish I learned earlier. I am only 29. I believe that I'm learning lessons pretty early to be on with you guys at that age to be making those decisions. I think, so it's probably really difficult for me to say things I wish I'd learned earlier, because I'm not sure how much earlier I really could have learnt them.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all need to go down a journey to get to our destination. I'm really glad that I did my carpentry apprenticeship and I moved to Brisbane. Without any of those goals, I never would be in the position that I am now.
Mm.
You know, it comes down to, without visiting one of your other members and an ex-podcastee, Nick from Esplan Building Group, he played a huge role in getting me and Yala up to Brisbane. And without that, our lives would be completely different. So I think we've had a really amazing journey, and I'm not really too sure I would change anything. There's nothing. I think we're surrounded by really, really good people. Our friends, our family, everyone around us is pushing really hard in their own entities. You know, we've got friends in consulting, friends in health, friends in building. It's friends that are in legal. It's, and everyone's really pushing to be at the pinnacle of their chosen field. So I think that's probably what's been the most important thing for us, to put ourselves in a position where we are surrounded by people that are positive and pushing the limits, because in turn, everyone's pushing each other. So it's probably hard to give you something that I would have liked to have learned earlier. I wouldn't change any of the things that I've been through at all. It's been a pretty incredible, you know, good and bad. We've had some setbacks. We've had some great achievements, and yeah, I don't think I'd change any of it. It's really created the person that I am and the people that we are around us. So
it's a pretty common response from people that we ask that question of. And look, over the years, I've heard people say, oh, I wouldn't change a thing. But sometimes I think it's said a bit flippantly, without the deeper consideration that you've given it around, well, if this hadn't happened, then this wouldn't have happened. And I mean, we don't know that for certain, but I like the way you sort of have that self-reflection, mate, and looking back on things as being the way they are for a reason, and that's just how they are. So, yeah, you always seem to look forward, which I really admire about you, mate. The other thing that you've sort of mentioned there And as the great grey shark that I am with Tom, the cameo on the podcast now, I want to circle back around to something, mate.
Go for it.
Mentors and external influences. Who's played a big part? I mean, you've talked about your mother and, you know, people like Nick, sort of colleagues and friends. But who's been some of the key people or groups or influences in you getting to this point and I guess that you see helping you get to the future goals that you've set for yourself and the wife?
Geez, here we go. This is another question I don't often ask myself. Parents always play a key role. I was very fortunate to have parents that pushed us to the limit. Dad was very much the person that would support us doing no matter what, and Mum was the person that was always out finding something new for us to pursue or a new competition. She was the instigator in getting us motorbikes as kids and racing and, you know, horses and
go Mum,
all the, you know, snowboarding and, you know, it was she really pushed hard because her childhood was average. So she really made a promise to herself that she kept that we would have everything that she could offer as a mother. And, you know, Dad was all more than happy to be that person that supported us. I've just had some really good people around me that have instilled some really key positive and attributes in me. And some of my high school teachers that were mentors to me, that, you know, one of them in particular was actually my dad's teacher when he was at the same school 30 years prior. And together we were involved in, so this teacher was, and I were involved in a mentoring program where we set up it was just a bike maintenance program that effectively you took year 10 kids and you put them with a member from the public who was sort of a, you know, someone that was a bit older and a bit more caring, and then a younger year 7 and year 8 kid that was struggling, you know, that wasn't coming from a good place, and that was a program that we had a lot to do with, and that instilled a lot of find the word to describe it. It was very powerful, and it was something that I learned very young, that you can have such a big influence on somebody without even knowing it. Mm. So things like that from a young age have been key to where I am now. That idea that you can always do better and do better for other people and be a better person, it's constantly there.
You certainly have been blessed with an amazing family and experiences to create who you are. You're wise beyond your years. This is something Warwick and I talk about often with you, Tom. I'm keen to know what sort of goals you have for the next 12 months.
Just the general one is growth. We want sustainable growth from here on in. I think we have a 5-year plan that's probably a bit more locked in. A 1-year plan is, it's going to be very challenging to see what happens at the start and in the middle of next year. I think our plan at the moment is just to put ourselves in the best position to tackle that. I think once we get to 2021 and get out of this beautiful year of 2020, I think we'll all have a better understanding of what's going to happen. So our goal is just to employ a few more guys to keep pushing along in growth. I need to still put in 110% into the business, and there's no backing off on that aspect. I need to spend a lot more time working on the business. And that's probably my number one goal personally, is to be able to put more time into that. More than we do now, but that's about it. I think as I've been discussing with both you guys for the last month, our main focus right now is just the start of January, February, March, making a successful start to the new year, putting ourselves in the best spot that we can. And I think that's probably our main goal at the moment. I think with this beautiful pandemic, it's probably changed the goalposts a lot for everyone. And I think for us, it's about understanding what that change is and where it's going to take us.
Geez, mate, if we could, I guess, carbon copy your headspace and infect a bunch of business people with it, it would reduce stress levels and failure rates enormously. It doesn't mean it's not hard, and you work bloody hard, and you know, there's been some monsters under the bed that you've had to club to death over the last 12 months, mate. And there'll be more breeding under there, I'm sure, as there is for all of us.
Definitely.
Now I'm too scared to go to bed, Warren.
I've just freaked a lot of people out,
kids. Yeah, I thought that was all not real. I've been telling my kids for years it's not real.
Just don't look under the bed at night.
No.
But, mate, it really highlights for me, having worked with hundreds and hundreds of business owners in the last decade and a bit, that headspace and just the attitude to change and challenge is such a critical component of growth in business. And for me, growth means, as we talked about earlier, it's not just about profit and cash flow. It's about, you know, a business that actually fits your life and facilitates your lifestyle. And I know you bugger off. I mean, you've only just recently employed your first full-time guy, if I can share that bit of information on the podcast, mate. And you've already nicked off for, a week and a half blooming holiday camping and fishing and left him largely to his own devices, and nothing burnt down while you're away. So, you know, that's a testament to your willingness to take action, mate, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say. There's no question in this, by the way, mate, so you don't have to freak out. I'm
sitting here trying to work out, I'm like, where am I going?
Where's he going with this? Is he going to circle around and strike the cage? But no, mate, I've you know, probably blown a bit of smoke, and rightly so, that you know, your headspace, I think, is you know, largely your secret weapon, mate, and I think it'll set you and your lovely wife up for a fantastic life, whatever that looks like results-wise, over the next, you know, year, 3-5 years. So I wish more younger trade business owners took the time to self-reflect as you do and ask those questions and be willing to have others ask them of you. And I think it's what Coxie and I like about working with you, Tom, and you know, we've got a lot of clients like you, where you're willing to actually take the questions from crusty old blokes like me and ask them of yourself as well. So there's my little cuddle for you, mate, a virtual slap on the back, and a high five and a bum slap.
I'm unfamiliar with these virtual cuddles. Normally it's a kick.
Oh, sorry, hang on. Just don't shatter the myth, mate. I'm putting on a good show for the podcast here. So I'm not sure if Coxie's got more questions because I keep talking over the top of her. I want to ask one that I don't feel like I've asked for a while, Coxie.
No.
Is Tom, let's go. I'm going to tweak this a little bit. Mm-hmm. If you had 1,000 trade business owners under the age of 30 in a room, what is one piece of advice you desperately want them to take away from today's episode?
You know what, I've known for a bit over a week that we were going to do this, and I should have thought about this question.
Is that your advice, mate? Think about Woz's question before he asks it.
Now, there's actually, there are two things that I have thought of that I probably have self-learned in the last 6 months that I'd probably want to emphasize, one of which we've already talked about, which is the finish line. And understanding that. And the other one is probably teamwork for me, which is probably quite unusual. And Nicole's and I've talked about this a couple of times about what I've been involved in with teamwork. But I think it's really important for us to all, I've been involved in some pretty not nice situations where we've had to do some things that Well, we've had to do recoveries for people, for families in surf life saving. And one of those situations, we were able to make a situation incredibly positive for all the people within the team by changing the mentality of how we went about what we had to do. And I think I was reflecting on this the other day. I think we've all been a part of a successful team, whether it's soccer, whether it's footy. We've all won in a team environment or had success in a team environment. So I think we all know that it's possible. What we don't know is how to replicate that when we're leading a team. And I think that's something that I've learnt through just reflection on these situations, is where I've been a part of a group of people led by some incredible minded and brilliant people that have turned one of the worst situations into a really positive environment where everybody's working together to complete a certain task. And I think if I was to want somebody to leave with any form of reflection, it would be that think about to a time when you've been a part of a successful group, whether it's as a little kid playing, you know, sport or whatever, and see if you can pick apart what made the team successful and actually think about and reflect on what it was that made them successful, or what, you know, and try and replicate it. Try and understand where you stand with your own team environment or how you work in a team. It's probably the one thing that's I've reflected on the most in the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks.
Great advice, mate.
It's an interesting reflection. I don't know that too many people ever stop and reflect on that point.
Well, I think it shows that it is possible.
Yeah.
When it's not something we're taught at school directly. I think we're taught it indirectly, but it's something that you, unless you stop and think about it, you know, we've all learnt the lessons, but it's very hard to replicate that. And I suppose that was one of the ways that we were able to take a little break with having our first employee, understanding how his communication language is and what he needs to succeed.
Yeah.
Understanding what his goals are and also how he likes to see positive and negative feedback. And once we understood that, it's easy. It's easy to leave people to their own devices. Once you've got that trust and that communication, they're incredibly talented people. That's the people that you employ, and they just need to be directed in the way that you do business.
I think you might have said it at the start of the episode about getting out of one's own way. And often we see business owners that not only get in their own way, but they get in the way of their team members as well. And they keep tripping their people up around them. And I literally had a conversation with one of our other clients and members this morning about this. You know, they're forging ahead down a path that is very positive. They're employing people, they're developing systems, and the business owner keeps getting in the way of everybody and actually stopping them from doing what they're there to do. So if he just lets them actually carry the ball for a little bit and, you know, he just passes it quickly, he'll get a lot further in front and have a lot less stress. So I think it's a fantastic summary, Tom, that you've given there. And I think it's about transference of skills from other areas of life. If there's been a thread today, you know, you've talked about sort of that influence of your mother and some of your activities on the ski fields and surf lifesaving and long distance events. It's transferring those skills into business. And a lot of our listeners, if you're sitting there thinking, well, I haven't done those things, as Tom said, have a look at things you have done in life. A lot of those skills around discipline and time management and financial management, you've developed those elsewhere, either in your trade or in your sport. They transfer to business. I think a lot of people are surprised to learn that they know a lot of stuff. It just doesn't look like what they think. So, mates, fantastic chatting to you as always. I kick you in the ribs a fair bit in our sessions because we're trying to keep to a time limit. So today's been nice just to chew the fat a bit more and wander around and circle around the shark cage with Woz. Thank goodness for Coxie to keep us on track.
But, mate, if someone wants to go and stalk you and find out more about what you're doing and have a look at all the good stuff that you're up to, what's the best way to do that?
Probably our website is probably the best way at the moment, and Instagram, so grandupprojects.com.au. We've got the awesome Steph from Get Tradies Online. We've been working with her for a while, so our website looks absolutely primo. Everything else that I'm in control of looks average. That's all right. Steph's working on it.
At least you recognise your skills, mate.
I am not a social media person. It's incredibly important tool, but it's just does not come naturally to me, unfortunately. But yeah, groundupprojects.com.au or on Instagram, Groundup Electrical. Throw us a like, throw us a follow. It's we're going to try and put up some more entertaining stuff as per your both your requests and Steph's request. Steph's was not really a request; it was more of a threat.
Threats are good.
So yeah, that's probably the best place.
Cool. Well, great having you on the show. I'm going to let Nicole round that out so she gets a chance to speak. She's opened and closed her mouth about 15 times in the last 5 minutes.
I do feel a bit like a goldfish today with my mouth opening and closing around the tank, which leans into your great grey shark. See, you're too busy chomping for me to do anything but suck on the air bubbles. No, Tom, it's been great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with our listeners. I look forward to the feedback we get on this one.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Been a pleasure, mate.
You've been listening to the Tradies in Business podcast with Warwick Bidwell and Nicole Cox. Find out more about today's guest, tools for your trade business, and other cool stuff at tradiesinbusiness.com.au.